So when I get nervous, start fucking.
Hello?
Wait. How does that go? At least you got the fuck up out of the way early.
Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's ball.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to slot machine-clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I am the horror nerd, Todd Starooch.
I hope you're sitting down, Todd.
Uh-oh.
You are. Well, what am I asking? Of course you are. You're probably lying down.
What do I do all day?
Yeah. All right. But I'm asking if you're sitting down because I have some shocking news for you.
Oh, boy.
And here's the shocking news. I'm a fucking idiot.
Well, wow.
That's quite the revelation, isn't it? I'll tell you why.
Okay.
And about 3 weeks ago, I got a new TV. And, you know, it's a Roku TV. And I set everything up. And you know, logins, accounts, and everything. And I'm looking for the volume control on the remote, which is about as basic a remote as you can get. And there's nothing on there. And then this message pops up on the TV that says, you know, scan the QR code to get the app for your phone. So if you ever lose your remote, you can always use the, you know, app on the phone to, you know, use the controls. And I'm like, well, cool. Maybe they'll actually have a volume control on this app. So I download the app and I hit the volume control thing on it. And then it says, if you want to use some premium services on this app, please pay $3.49 a month. $3.49 a month to use the goddamn volume controls. What? No wonder these chiefs.
Welcome to America.
I paid the $3.49. Next morning, I turn the TV on, and then the volume goes up. I'm like, what the hell is this? The volume control is on the side of the remote. And I didn't even think to look on the side.
Wow.
That's
if you ever need help again with any of your electronics, I'll send my 6-year-old niece over to help you. Because, yeah. So, wow. Okay. You are indeed an idiot.
Yes, I am. But also, right, really quickly, because we do have a guest, I do want to mention this. It was 9 years ago today I recorded the very first Imaginarium.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So like when you were 70.
Exactly.
All right. Excellent. All right. So I will introduce
our guest, Tracy.
But I don't know if you've noticed, but I will never, ever get tired of tweaking these anti-Christmas people that are driving me crazy. I will just say this. If seeing Christmas decorations causes you that much emotional distress, might I suggest professional help?
Well, but I would also say if those people, you know, live in your head rent free, you might as well get, you know, charge them for it.
Yeah, but no, it's not that. It's kind of the other way around. I am well aware of what I'm doing. I'm tweaking them on purpose. You know what I mean? I don't lose any sleep over these bozos. But anyway, we do have a guest and I am very excited about it. I truly am. So our guest is extremely cool and extremely funny. Her show, Divorce Diaries, I saw she'll explain it because I don't know how to explain it. It was like a short film that was made up. And I cried. Like, I literally cried. It was one of those things, Scott, where I cried laughing. And I'm not saying that because she's going to be on the show. It was that funny. And she's created this whole comedy world and persona about her divorce. And being a member of the Happily Divorced Club myself, I kind of latched onto it. So, I am very happy to introduce our guest, Michelle Traina. Michelle, how are you?
Hi, Todd. Hi, Scott. Hi, everybody. I'm very excited to be here. I opened up my camera. I know it's just audio, but I just felt like opening up my camera as well. Yeah, I think that Divorce Diaries, we met at a film festival through my director, Angie Hansen, and who's amazing. And she's actually helped me with the web series we just shot. So Divorce Diaries is a plethora of items. You can do the live show, the film, I mean, the pilot, the web series. I'll create a feature at some point. What else? It's there's many things under the Divorce Diaries brand. It's an entertainment brand, I like to say, but it started with a one woman show, me just getting it out in New York City. And I'm happy to share the story about my divorce diary with my post life, you know, post divorce life. I mean, I think that some people find it weird. Like, oh, it's some people have told me like, well, you pigeonhole yourself to divorce. And I'm like, well, I don't really, but it's just the fact that a lot of this is taking place during and after I got divorced. So it's my diary.
So just real quick. You know, whenever I say to people, like back when we got separated and everything, oh, I'm separated, I'm divorced. We were like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, don't be. It turned out that it was for the best. It really was. Having said that, for me, I can only speak for myself, but separation and divorce is difficult and it is painful. But Scott and I talk about all the time how comedy usually comes from a painful or a dark place, you know? So tell us the story. How did you decide to turn your personal experience into this comedy empire?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of work comes from pain, right? That's how we heal and process from where our quote unquote outlets, which I like to say outlets become career paths, right? I think at the time how it originally started was when I finally moved out of the house I was, you know, owned with my ex-husband. And I was moving in with my parents and my daughter, and there was a lot of chaos going on around me at the time. We were selling our house on a short sale or we were hoping not to get in a foreclosure. My daughter had some issues with not talking, and we had to get developmental evaluations and therapy, and I wasn't at the place I thought I would be at 32, which now at 42, I feel like, oh my gosh, I was so young. But like at the time, I'm like, oh my God, you know, moving back home, financial crisis, your child's not not on the same path, you know, developmental path as other kids. And you feel like, what is going on? So, but at the same time, I also felt like there was a liberation in me finally getting out of this unhappy space I was in for a long time. With me and my ex-husband, we're in a funky place for a while. It wasn't just like, oh, here, wake up this morning. Now I want a divorce, you know? So I think when I finally got home back to my parents, I started wanting to create from it right away. I was always performing since I was in high school, and I chose the path of being an actor. I was also a teacher for a period of time, full-time, and I always performed though on the side. If it wasn't full-time performing, I was always still doing it, right? So I had just started to do this one woman show concept since I was in college. I've done a few, and I had done United Solo Festival with a show called How to Be a Successful Teacher that I wrote based on my life as a teacher. So I decided to write the stuff from my post-divorce and create it in an emerging artist theater workshop in New York City. And that's kind of where everything started, right? I just wanted to create and put it on stage because that's how I maneuver through life. So it started that way. And then I didn't really do stand-up until 2 years after I got divorced. Excuse me, a year after I got divorced. But I had always had a background in improv. I studied at UCB in my early 20s, and I always had comedy and physical comedy specifically as part of my character traits as a performer. So that's kind of how it all started, how the roots started, right? And in the last, his 2015 is when I had the first inception of Divorce Diaries. It's very small, foundational level. And then that was the end of the 20, it was like October 2015. And then it just kept building and developing from there. It turned into from a one-woman play to a stand-up show to then a one-woman comedy show. And now it is the one-woman comedy show in the same structure I've been touring with since 2018. And I always felt it was a TV series. I always felt like I should be on Bravo because I loved Bravo. And I love how those television shows, most of them are unscripted. They would pull me out from my dark hours and feeling good inside. Like, that's what I want to do for someone else through my craft. And although it's not a reality show, it's, you know, it's a mockumentary. It can be. I'm willing to shift it, whatever. I just want to help people on a broader scale through my craft. And Divorce Diaries is a second child of mine. So.
Cool.
Yeah, I always think when people talk about divorce and marriage, I always think of a line that David Brenner had, and I absolutely love it. He goes, you know, 3 out of 4 marriages end in divorce. And he says, now, if you walked out of your house and 3 out of 4 times you walked out of it, somebody dumped a bucket of shit on your head, you wouldn't go out anymore.
So you're saying you shouldn't get married anymore?
No, I'm saying I'm not getting married. I'm staying in.
Yeah, and I think that the societal norms are shifting too now. I think that it is definitely a little bit more acceptable than it was like when I was a kid, where it's like I don't look at it the way a lot of people do. There are still a lot of people that don't look at it that way, and they feel like you quit your marriage, and you know, and it's, you know, I'm a very hopeful romantic. I don't think that. I wouldn't have gone into my marriage thinking I was going to get divorced. You know, nobody wants that. Everybody wants a life partner. But I think that, again, the societal norm is like life partners are hard to find to grow with one person from the time you're 20 to you're 90. That's, you know, intense. So, but there are people out there that find it, you know, and again, our generational norms have changed. It's just society has shifted. We're able to access so much more and be able to experience the world in a different lens that I think the norm is shifting. But that doesn't mean, you know, monogamy is also a thing. You can not get married and be in a monogamous relationship. So it just comes into all these things that you can start to question. And I think, you know, divorce is a big stigma because of the money and the children involved and a lot of chaos, and dating after divorce and dealing with parents and comparing yourself. It's marriage and then the outskirts, right? Because that's mm-hmm. what it is. And that's kind of what my show talks about, is being on the outskirts. We all have a seat at the table of divorce, whether you've been divorced, you know somebody who's divorced, or you're a product of divorce. Everybody's got a seat at it. And it's transition. I mean, who has not experienced a life transition in their lifetime? And I think finding the humor is important because the other alternative is like being depressed about it. Yeah, you should feel pain and sadness, but then why not connect your story in a humorous way to someone that could be like, haha, that's funny. That happened to me too. Like, you know, some of the best moments of our life are when we belly laugh so hard we're crying, right? You don't want to leave the table. With my family, we didn't want to leave the table if we were in that kind of conversation. That's kind of what I want the show to bring to people.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree with you, Michelle, that things are definitely changing, right? You know, I'm a little older. I'm 55. So I grew up where, you know, I had an aunt who everyone in the family knew was in an abusive marriage, but you just didn't leave your marriage, especially in an Italian Catholic family, you know? That was stigma. I think today, people, especially younger, like Gen Z, whatever the current term is, view it as more just as a business contract. You know, I know people who have been together for decades and are perfectly happy and have no plans to get married. They're like, what's the point at this point? And I wish I could take credit for the following. I can't, but I can't remember who said it. Like, no one today, like let's say marriage didn't exist, no one would invent it. Like no one would say, hey, babe, you know, we have such a great thing going. I love you. You love me. We're happy. We're together. We have this life together. You know what? Let's get the government and the church involved. That'll make everything better. No one would do that, you know? And yeah, I really feel that way. People ask me, would you ever get married again? I'm like, I don't know. You know, who knows? I have no idea what will happen tomorrow. Right. You know?
And it's like, I never say never, but the amount of legal paperwork that goes back. So I just, you know, I just was like, I don't think I want to do that. But at the end of the day, you know what? I didn't get married to get divorced either. So there's always a fine line of saying, well, I don't know what I would do. I think Italian Catholic families, I think a lot of families actually, I mean, I'm not Italian, raised Italian. I am Italian and I was raised Catholic. And that, you know, that was a big thing of like, you don't get divorced. And my grandparents definitely should have gotten divorced. My dad's parents, my mom's parents were madly in love, but I could tell like my dad's parents were not. Like, we're definitely not. And like, they just stay together because that's what you do. Right. That was the old school mentality. You just are miserable now for the rest of your life. Too bad. And that's just not, I think we, as we're evolving, that's not what we want to want for our life and for our children. And why would we have to stay miserable?
And yeah, 100%. And I used to joke with Scott about this all the time, like, you know, and when the whole topic, you know, of gay marriage, you know, and then the Supreme Court decision and everything, I'm like, I have no problem. Let them get married and be miserable like the rest of us, you know? Oh, it's yeah. Like, and then that became like a big joke. And then I said, no. I want to see the first gay divorce because.
Oh, there's tons of them. Yeah.
That's the fabulous furniture in the divorce, you know? I'm like,
I also think that love is love. Like, I have friends who got divorced from. I have a friend who got divorced twice, two men, and now she's with a woman. And she doesn't label herself anything except, you know, she was in an unhappy relationship with someone for a long time, an abusive relationship. And this person she's with now is amazing to her, for her. They're both amazing for each other. And it's like, that's what the kind of love that they have is kind of what we all aspire to have, I think, because they're each other's best friend. And they're also, you know, compatible in a relationship. And they live. And it's long distance, but they see each other more than I have seen guys I've dated a town over.
Right.
Right. And they both walk and work in law enforcement. So you would think it's even harder. They don't make it difficult because it's easy between the two of them. And I think that, you know, obviously when you have children involved, it's hard to shift. But I find the humor, right, in the situations of these moments with co-parenting, new spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends. I try to create the material from what's going on in my world to help other people feel better about the chaos they might be going through, because it is chaotic and the anxiety that it conjures up is like a lot. It's like no other, at least for me. I get anxiety. Like, I got parent-teacher conferences, the competitions. I have all these things juggling in my head and I'm like, oh my God. And I looking like a hot mess and talking about it will maybe help somebody else who feels that way, that feels excluded or on the outskirts or doesn't feel like they're fitting in. Right.
Holy shit, Michelle, if this, what I'm seeing on the camera now is what you call a hot mess, I am never leaving my house again.
Well, just... I did get showered and dressed for this because I had to record an audition. And I had a video. I have a meeting with my daughter's teachers, and also, this honestly isn't looking that great right now. I feel like I've been editing all weekend. And so hopefully when you see the Divorce Diaries web series, which is a little different than the TV pilot, because we tried to get Investor to shoot six episodes with a proof of concept and nothing kind of happened. We got a smaller sponsor. They're not small, but they're big to us. But we did get a sponsor to fund filming for a web series, which we shot in 8 hours, which is nuts, right?
That is crazy. Wow.
Angie said to me, this is a little ambitious kind of schedule. I was like, uh-oh. And we did it, though, and I'm editing it now. So I'm hoping that you guys will love it even more.
Nice. So, Scott, I think women's like standards are just different than ours. Like when they say, oh, I'm such a hot mess, I'm like, all right.
I do feel like, well, I'm a hot mess.
Fair enough.
Women have standards, period. Men generally don't.
I just...
have to do is go to Walmart to see that.
I just did a video, or I posted something of a dating on a dating app. It was like an ad for it. And it said single in your 40s. And it was like a hot doctor, but he was in scrubs or a nurse, you know? And I was like, oh, this is so false. Like, this is not, it said dating in your 40s. I'm like, this is not dating in your 40s. And I wanted to put a picture of the last like couple of men that have, actually there was one guy that hit on me who's married, came to my show, then FaceTimed with me like a week later with his wedding bands on.
Nice.
What'd I tell you?
Wow.
So I said to him, I was like, why do you have a wedding band on? And he's like, oh, I did it to, and he made up the story to basically, I can't even remember the verbiage he used, but he was saying that his neighbor stalks him. So he was trying to use it to scare the neighbor away.
Wow. That's creative, at least. I mean, you know.
Well, I had a feeling it was going to be something like that. Or, you know, I want the women at work to stop hitting on me or something like that. It's a typical excuse. I've heard that before.
You have heard this excuse before? Oh, my God. It's
yeah.
Yes.
Although, listen, I will tell you what. It's total bullshit because it doesn't work. I will tell you what, and Scott knows this. I am very like self-deprecating. I'm that guy where I'll be out with friends and my brother or my buddy will be like, dude, buy that girl at the bar a drink. She's been looking at you all night. And I'll be like, shut up. Like, why is she looking at me? But as soon as I got married and put on the wedding ring, I got more attention from women than I ever did in my life. I think there's like some women, I don't want to paint with a broad brush. It's like this, though. I'm going to go after something that's like, that I'm not supposed to have, you know?
I mean, that doesn't get my juices going, but I had, and if you listen to Divorce Diaries, the show, and some of my podcast episodes way back when, I did have a situation where somebody lied to me and said they were separated and I had an affair with him for like a year and a half and he never wore a wedding band. And that was not what drew, I sound real great now, but it's a part of the storyline actually of trying to find love and believing in it and the desperation and not, you know, really just a lot of spiraling out of control. Right. So anyway, he never wore a wedding band. And the thing that does turn me off is when I see a guy with a wedding band, because it's just like ultimate destruction. And also like, if you go down that road, it's just you're self-sabotaging yourself. I think that there's truth to that though. I have heard that. And I also think for men too, it's not all men, but I've heard men that want to do that. I want to start wearing like a ring in my middle finger. I always lose my rings. I had a ring on my middle finger. It said boss on it. My friend got it for me, but I lost it. But like, I just want to wear it on my middle finger. Cause I have, make it a sign of commitment to saying fuck off to anybody that comes to me. Hopefully I can curse on your podcast. Sorry.
No, you can. Listen. Okay. Yeah. We remember that thing about standards. We said a couple of, we don't have them. So you're good. You're good.
At least you're being honest.
Listen, I am a believer. Like, look, I try not to walk around like swearing like a sailor in daily life. But I also believe like, look, grown-ups are grown-ups. And sometimes like Buddy Hackett said, let's say you drop an anvil on your foot. What are you going to say? Spring is here. No, you're going to say, holy shit, I broke my fucking foot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right. It's just life. So no, we don't care.
Good. I'm glad. Okay.
Yeah.
Has your ex seen the Divorce Diaries or does he have any kind of opinion on what you've turned your divorce into?
Yeah. I mean, I think overall, I think it's has not been negative from him. Thank God. When I shot the comedy special of Divorce Diaries last year, we threw it up on Amazon. I asked him if he wanted me to send the jokes I was going to do about us. And he said something that was that earned him so many great ex-husband points. He was like, "You can if you want, but it's comedy. I don't really care." You. So he hasn't come to like a live show or anything like that. He probably won't, but he knows about it. Yeah, of course he does. He knows I do it, and I think his girlfriend watched my special. So yeah, he's aware, you know. So I do a lot of ex-husband jokes, but now that I'm doing them mostly to just create humor for everybody. Like there is a lot of sincerity of the fact that my ex-husband and I are getting along better than we ever were in our marriage. But we're not besties, you know, like we're just not, and we're not going to be, that's just who we are. You know, that's kind of why we got divorced. I think also, I hope that I do like a lot of jokes for What's Up New York. I'm a host of the show called What's Up New York. And I sometimes do a lot. I'm like, oh, like my ex-husband, like I'll do jokes like that in conversation to create humor in our scenes and our interviews. But I started to think to myself, I'm like, well, if my ex-husband ever did hear that, would he get offended? I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure he'd be like, oh, I'm just doing it. So I don't think so. But most of the stuff he's been like a quiet supporter of like, yeah, sure. Do what do what you love kind of thing. So
that's cool.
That's cool. You know, Todd, you talking earlier about gay divorce. My niece and her wife just got divorced a couple 3 months ago.
Wow.
And,
yes.
Yeah. And that's serious. But the worst part of it was, you know, they've been arguing over who gets, who gets custody of the U-Haul.
Oh boy!
The joke in that is
they both like moving trucks.
What do lesbians do on a first date? Rent a U-Haul.
Why?
That's one of those things that I grew up with, being a gay man, being around lesbians, is that they always ended up living together, like on the first or second date. That became the joke.
Okay, I didn't get it either.
I didn't get it at all. But Jessica, yeah. Now I get it. Jessica Curson is one of my favorite comedians, and she's a lesbian.
Oh my God. I've got tickets for her for, I think it's January. She's coming to Phoenix, and I can't wait. I have never peed my pants. I mean, literally, I had drops of pee in my pants from laughing at her.
Oh boy. That's what you should tell her, that because she's hysterical. I've seen her live too, and she's so great. And she does jokes about that in her comedy about how, like, yes, I think it's fun. Listen, I said to my friend who's in a relationship now with a woman, I was like, wow, you guys moved really fast. She goes, yeah, I know, but it feels right. I said, well, because we know what we want. Women know what they want, and they don't want to sit on it. Sometimes men take forever. Like, I have gone through I've gone through the same man for 8 years. And the last guy is like, I'm not the same as the other guys. How do you say that? I'm like, you don't want to commit to me. I said, I don't even want to commit. I just want to be monogamous as we date each other. Like, that's a hard concept for, I don't know about you both, but men don't want to, the men I've interacted with don't want to just say, okay, me and you are going to date for the next month, and I'm not going to talk to anybody else because I'm getting to know you. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to do that. And I get that if you have to talk to other women, but I mean like date, we're taking the time to get to know each other amidst our crazy schedules. And how do you have time to date five other women while you're getting to know me? There's not going to be enough attention on me. And I don't understand why men are afraid of that. Like, well, the men again that I am attracted to, maybe that's kind of why I'm attracted to them, because then like I don't need to be in a relationship and I could be like not feel suffocated. I don't know. This is turning into a therapy session.
Oh boy.
But isn't it that like they don't like, it's like putting your hand in a bowl of chips and double dipping. That's what dating is. It's disgusting. Like, I'm sorry.
It's you're 50 years
old. How many more women do you need to have on your dick? Like, stop treating your dick like it's Radio City Music Hall and everybody wants a ticket to it. They don't.
It's FOMO. It's fear of missing out.
What? We are not afraid of missing out on their stupid ass. We want to dedicate, like, sorry. I'm not fearful. I see what I see that the FOMO. They think they can get a hotter chick or a better chick. It's like, dude, this is what I'm saying. Like, I don't know why I even care, because like I slept with somebody and I care about him, and then I'm just like, why do I even want to date you if you're having this much struggle to date me? And you think that your dick is going to get all this other kind of pussy? Kitty cat, go for it. Try it. I have slept with you. It does not work that well.
And the thing is, if they could get somebody hotter, wow, they already would have.
They already
would have. Wait. Scott, who invited this girl on this podcast? I don't know. Okay, so let's slow down just for a second, shall we?
Todd's feeling defensive at the moment.
No, I'm feeling personally. No. At my age, I'm 55. There are things that I don't care about anymore.
Like a pulse.
Right.
A pulse.
Right. I don't care that some younger girl bats her eyes at me or whatever anymore. I might get flattered, but I'm like, that's going to go nowhere. Like when I see guys my age, and I'm not saying this just to sound like too cool for school or like a white knighter or something like that. I hate that shit. But like, I've seen guys my age date girls that are in their mid-20s. And I'm like, what do you even fucking talk about?
Ew, it's gross.
You have no frame of reference or anything. And I get it. A guy wants a trophy. He wants arm candy or whatever. I don't care about any of that anymore. I just don't.
It's creepy. I'm going to be real. It's creepy.
But why is it only creepy when it's the man who's older? Cher can bang a 30-year-old guy and everybody thinks it's awesome.
No. Well, here's the thing. I only think it's creepy because I'm now 42. And when I look at a 22-year-old, I'm like, I could have been his mom. Like, and it's weird.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I get it.
It's weird. And it's like, but I get if someone does fall in love, like, who am I to say you shouldn't be in love with someone younger or older? I get that. But what I don't like, and this is just the fact of like, what I don't like is when I interact with somebody that I have feelings for that has known me, that acts as if they're doing me a favor by just like being my friend, but keeping me in the back burner, but they could be a dick. They say I could be a bigger dick if I wanted to, but I care about you.
Like, yeah, that's bullshit. Yeah, no, that's mean. That's like, mean.
Right. Oh, let me ask you both a question. If somebody sent you a nude picture, a woman you've been intimate with that you care about, right? If she sent you a nude picture, how long should it take you to respond? Each individually answer. So Todd, how long would it take you to respond?
About 3 seconds.
Got it. Todd, how long?
Probably about as long as that. Yeah. It wouldn't take very long at all.
Okay. Now, it took 5 hours. If it took 5 hours, what do you think the reason is?
Yeah, he's with somebody else. He doesn't want someone to see the phone. Now, so this might sound weird to you, right? But here's the thing. And maybe my perspective is warped. A, I have an 18-year-old daughter. And B, I work in cybersecurity.
Yeah.
So my question would be, why in the world are you sending nude pictures? Because if I want to get back at you, I will screenshot that shit and send it to everyone on the planet.
Oh, I mean, yeah. You could do that.
That's just how I think, because like, you know, I don't get me wrong. That's a dick move to do that.
Yeah. But I think that's what
I think about is like, no, don't ever do that. Guys are assholes.
I would never, ever ever do that.
But why is your face turning red though?
I would be so mortified, I think, if somebody took 5 hours to respond to, a dick pic I sent out. I would have to change my phone number, change my email addresses, so I would never have to hear from them again.
Wait, okay. So, Scott, that's a great point. So I felt mortified. I was like, listen, this on and off again stuff has been going on for a while. And originally the reasoning was because he doesn't want to be, it was a whole thing that happened in August when we were dating and I lost my cool with him and I was like, fuck you, and my Instagram, which was wrong, but whatever. So apologize for it. We did this taking it slow friendship shit. And then we had been intimate. He took me out for my birthday. We were kind of being intimate, you know, whatever. And I consented and I wanted to. And then that weekend I was like, hey, you know, I did that and it took 5 hours. And I said to myself, because then he wrote back 5 hours later, nice shower. That he said, nice shower. I'm out with a friend from work. So I knew, I was like, this isn't good. So I said to myself, okay, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I'm not going to talk to him. He messaged me. He called me the next day at 7:30 at night. Now, it has taken you a whole day to contact me, right? I didn't answer. I was at my daughter's competition. He calls me again at 10:30. I said, I'm busy putting my, or 9:30, putting my daughter to sleep. And he goes, okay, well, I could tell from your last text. I want to make sure you're okay. Because when he had texted me back, finally, I wrote, ignore, I shouldn't have sent. That's what I said. He said, I could tell from your text you weren't okay. And I felt like, I just was like, if you could tell from my text I wasn't okay, why would you wait till 12 hours later to contact me? Because you're with somebody else, or I'm just not a fucking priority. So when I said, what I texted him back was, I'm fine. I need a break from our friendship for a while, and left it at that. And he wrote back, great, I have no ill will towards you. Let me know when I could talk to you again. And then I didn't respond, which is growth for me, because if you've known me in the past, I tend to go back and forth, but I just let it go. Because I said to myself, like Scott, you said, it's like a mortifying feeling of like, so now I'm being even more, and I, you know, I've known this person for a couple of years. Like, we were friends before we dated. So now it's like even more so a hit to my fucking ego for you to like take that long. And the best part, you want to hear it? You want to hear why? Because I said, because he asked me if I was, I said, I'm
fine. Oh, I can't wait.
I said, I'm fine. It took you 5 hours to respond to 2 nudes. I think that I need a break from this friendship. That's what I wrote. Do you know what he said? I was at a Jeff Ross comedy show. I had to have my phone off. Now, this is not the first time he's used a comedy show as bullshit about not responding to a text. Old Michelle would have been like, fuck you, you're a liar. Blah, 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 blah. Michelle was like, I don't really care where you are. This is not working for me. And that was it. That was my last message after he said whatever he said. I left it open. Yeah, it's interesting material and research for me as I'm doing dating and stuff, but it's hurtful, you know, when you get that and you're like, ugh, you know, how many women are you with?
Note everybody, if you date Michelle, you will be part of her comedy tour at some point, just like Taylor Swift. Like, how soon before Travis Kelce is written into a song?
It's you, baby, I'm gonna burn you.
I love it. All right, so I know you have to get going shortly.
Yes.
So just so real quick, did you ever think, like when you said, oh, I'm going to try to turn my experience into comedy, Did you ever think that it would really take off the way that it has?
So yes, that was the goal. I wanted it to take off. I'm not giving up. So I think it's still not there yet. I think it's just kind of an incline. So that was always the goal. I never said, hey, I'm just going to do this and go back to doing my hobby. I always knew I wanted to go back to performing full time. I knew that Divorce Diaries, I just wanted to always be this big show and just keep living out my dream of being on stage full time, all the time creating. And yeah, I only want that. I won't stop doing it ever.
Awesome. Now, I love that. I love that commitment, you know, because I know that performing is a hard road. You know, I promote a lot of events and I have all kinds of different performers. Well, you'll see, because you are going to be performing at Night of the Giving Dead Part 2 on December 3rd at Crossroads in Garwood, New Jersey. Shameless self-promotion.
No, I'm going to promote the shit about it. I'm super excited.
It's but it is a hard road. So I admire your commitment to it and your tenacity. I really do.
I appreciate that. Well, thank you. I'm glad we got to do this today. And it was a lot of fun. And I'm excited for December 3rd.
have you back. Now, Scott, we do not hand these things out like to just anyone. So you have an open invitation. Like if you have something to promote, you know, when the web series really gets going, you're on tour or whatever, and then we can schedule this when we have a little more time, you know. And
that would be awesome.
We definitely will have you back. So
thank you.
But before you run, so just tell everyone like how they can follow you along, where they can get more info.
Yeah.
And such.
So thank you, Todd and Scott, for having me. Everybody can go to divorcediariesshow.com. They can join the email list. They can find my Instagram, my YouTube, my TikTok, my Snapchat, the podcast. You can find everything under the sun. Michelle Traina, Divorce Diaries, everywhere and anywhere. I'm also the host of What's Up New York. It's a fun show to watch too. On NY2C.com. So if you go to divorcediariesshow.com, you can find everything there.
Awesome. This was a lot of fun. I didn't realize I had logged into betterhelp.com. but hey, it was all good.
And I love it. This is great.
And I tried not to feel personally attacked in any way.
Well, Todd, we're going to create a Divorce Diaries horror comedy next, so stay tuned.
Let's do it. Oh.
I'm 100% for it. 110%. I've told Angie, like, we're going to create something. So I appreciate you.
I would love to be a part of that. I love you. I love Angie. I've known Angie for a really long time from the horror community, and she and I actually worked together on a rom-com, believe it or not. So
we have to talk more then after we get off.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thanks so much for your time, Michelle. I will see you in a couple of weeks.
Yes, thank you, Todd. Thank you, Scott. Take care.
Thank you, Michelle.
All right.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun. So, yeah, everyone, if you have a chance, you know, go to divorcediarieshow.com. Michelle's show is hilarious. And given that half the country, you know, half the people in the country have gone through a divorce, it's relatable. For a lot of us, comedy is best when it's relatable, you know, and she's really funny. I was thrilled when she said yes, that she would perform at my charity event.
That's awesome. That'll be a lot of fun.
I wanted to mix it up, you know, having live music is great. But then I said, you know, what if we also had some stand up comedy, you know, to kind of mix it up a little bit, and someone who definitely has like a following in New York and New Jersey, you know.
That'd be great. All right, since we've got a few minutes now.
Yeah, we do.
Did you finish watching Fall of the House of Usher?
I did. And it was, I want to watch it again.
Yeah, I do.
So I can try to catch everything that I missed. Because there are websites that literally list every single thing, like every Poe reference, every Easter egg. I didn't read any of them yet. I want to go through it again and see which ones I missed. You know, I thought the last episode dragged a little bit. You know, I was like, all right, let's wrap this up. But other than that, I thought it was freaking amazing.
Yeah, I didn't have any qualms about the final episode. I thought it was fine. But oh gosh, what's his face? Elliot from E.T., the actor.
Oh, Henry Thomas.
Henry Thomas. Boy, what a scumbag he was in that.
Right. Oh my God.
I told you he got worse.
And you weren't lying. You know what? And you know what? It's like, I like the fact that, I mean, look, all of the characters, the family members were all detestable in their own way.
Very true.
And I like the fact that the show didn't try to give them redemption. They all kind of got what they deserved, except for the granddaughter, you know. She was the virtuous one who had to pay the price for the bargain that Roderick struck, you know,
exactly.
Back then. And I like the fact that Verna, the Carla Gugino character, it's never specifically stated who or what she is, you know? at first I figured, oh, it's the devil, you know, but it's never stated that that she's the devil. I don't think so anyway.
I like that too. And that's something that's becoming, I think, increasingly rare in horror, where sometimes things just are. Not everything needs an explanation.
Yeah, and I like that. I don't need everything wrapped up in a tidy bow for me. I like to be able to try to figure it out for myself, you know?
Yeah, I do too.
But even at the end, right? Like Roderick Usher, you think that he's telling this story so he can confess his sins and clear his conscience. But at the very end, he even says, spoiler alert, it doesn't matter. I could have told everyone what the side effects were of my drug, and I still probably could have sold it. And yep. I was like, wow, what a scumbag, you know, like. You know, like usually at the end when people are going to meet their maker, they're like, oh, I wish I had done things differently. Nope.
And the thing is, he's really not wrong. I mean, if you look at drug manufacturers today, and if you look at the list of side effects for any of the medications that either of us take, you know, some of them are pretty fucking severe, including death. You know, so it's, but we still take them.
Well, but here's the thing. Just like the tobacco companies putting warnings on cigarette packs, they're not doing that out of fucking altruism, you know?
No, they're doing it.
Right. Because they were told you have to, or you're going to get put out of business.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, man, we've had this discussion, right? Like told you, you know, I, you know me, I don't really publicize medical things or anything, but I was in the hospital for a few days because they started me on a new heart and a new anti-arrhythmic heart medicine because I have AFib and it was getting worse. And you have to be in the hospital for 3 days when they start you on it. So if it, you know, there are any harmful effects that be while you're already in the hospital. And I really thought about that. And I said, well, at least they're being upfront about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you what, I know it's fashionable to bash pharma and bash modern medicine, but dude, I've only been on it like a week and a half and I feel better. I have more energy. I don't feel the flutter and the palpitations and the heart racing anymore. Cool. I don't get winded when I go up a flight of steps to do my laundry or anything. So, say what you will about pharma, but so far this medicine has changed my life.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that.
You know, I mean, so there you go. I mean, let's, you know, the opioid crisis is a whole other thing. There was some shady shit going on there. But there are medicines that literally save lives and change lives, you know, and I'm not a shill. I don't work for a pharmaceutical company, you know, but I only speak from my experience, but yeah, man. And I like the way that the whole pharmaceutical, like the opioid crisis wove its way through Fall of the House of Usher. I never felt like that we were being beaten over the head about it.
Right.
As a social issue. You know what I mean? It was just it was the conduit to modernize the story and to tell us how did the Usher family get so wealthy.
Yeah.
You know, that would just happen to be a modern kind of thing that they used. So I loved it, man. I just loved it. And the ending was pretty much the way House of Usher ends.
Yeah.
You know, with the house splitting in two and everything. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I definitely want to watch it again just to catch all the references that I missed. And I want to see what's his name, Flanagan, does now that he's going to move over to Amazon. And he's got pretty much Amazon, all the unlimited resources.
Yeah, well, I know he's doing a Stephen King adaptation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't see that.
Yeah, he's going to be doing an adaptation of one of the novellas from if it bleeds.
Okay. I haven't read King in a really long time. I'm so far behind on any new stuff. I think the last Stephen King book I read was From a Buick 8.
Yeah. Well, If It Bleeds is, I don't want to say fairly old, but, let's see.
If only there was a way we could find out.
When it came out. But it came out
2020.
I thought it came out earlier than that.
Originally published 2020, released on April 28th, 2020. I didn't realize that's where Mr. Harrigan's phone came from.
And it's the life of Chuck that he's going to.
Okay. Because, I watched Mr. Harrigan's phone, and I thought it was really good. I liked it.
I liked that quite a bit,
too. Yeah, it was very good.
So, all right, cool. So let's wrap this up, because I got to go, because I've got to be out.
All right.
At 5:105. So.
Got to work for a living.
Well, I got to work for a living, but we're also having the Thanksgiving potluck.
Nice.
Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah, they're catering it and everything.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Yeah. My tax dollars at work. All right.
Well, exactly. Oh, and your tax dollars also gave me a nearly $2 raise too. So thank you.
Listen, good for you, man.
Yeah. Yeah, they raised the base pay. And so that has boosted what I'm making by almost $2.
Hey,
so,
listen. That's cool.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, what have you got going on?
Well, as I had mentioned earlier, Sunday, December 3rd at Crossroads in Garwood, New Jersey, Night of the Giving Dead 2, our annual toy drive and fundraiser to support Scares That Care. We've got amazing live entertainment. We've got Arena, Relive the Rock, Fade to Suede, Nicole Oliva, Nola Bunny, Cherry Valentine, Vanka. We've got Michelle Traina. And I'm certain that I'm forgetting some other entertainment, but it's a $10 donation at the door for a full day of live entertainment and fun. And plus, you never know what I'm going to wear this year to embarrass myself to raise money for Scares That Care. But it's for a good cause. Come on out and hang out with us. We're going to have a great time. Bring one, at least one unwrapped toy. And we're going to have some pretty cool raffle prizes as well that we, we bitch about humanity all the time, Scott. You and me are no exception. But every year when I have this fundraiser, I put out the call and people respond. So I've been getting some pretty cool prizes donated that we're going to raffle off and things like that. So, every year, my faith in humanity gets restored by this event. So there we are.
All right. All right. And as usual, you can still pick my books up at Amazon, and you get the ebooks wherever ebooks are sold, and the audiobook versions at audible.com. And the new book, Tree of Everlasting Sorrow, will be out early next year. That is literally maybe 15,000 words from being finished now. And so I'm excited about that. And that's what I've got going on. And awesome. Until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.